This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We haven't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
David West, man, he really wants to win a ring.
He really does.
Kevin Rayfuse.
But I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuczak.
I know. I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
So I got my voice back this week. It's been 2 weeks since I've been on this show.
Soul searching?
Yeah. Something like that. Went to Asheville last weekend, and you guys had an episode. It was great. Chris Axman from the Almighty Ballin' Podcast came on. Let's talk about my intro quote, because I think... Tim, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we made a joke that I've had my intro quote for a long time.
Yes.
My plan was, this week I'm coming back, 2 weeks I'm like, you know what, it's time, we've talked about it, I'm going to change my intro quote.
Wait, you just now discovered it's time?
No, well, regardless, the point is, I'm like, I had an epiphany. It's as simple as that, in the woods. Maybe it was in the woods, maybe it wasn't, that's not important. And then you guys talked about it in the intro last week.
So now it's like you can't change it almost.
No, absolutely not. I'm riding it for at least 3 more weeks. At least.
We also brought it up later in the episode. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, because we were talking about the truthfulness of the Drive and Dish podcast.
Yeah.
And asked how we can
claim that
with your, to his words, completely wrong quote at the
how
very
can
beginning.
You start off with a false statement if you claim to be fully true?
Well, I mean, my point in that quote is that I don't want to stay, you don't want to be in the middle ground. You want to either be really bad and get a high draft pick, or you want to be hopefully at the level where you can compete. I don't think being in the middle ground was my point. And the point is, like, you don't want to wait and sit in the middle ground and just, maybe that's when Steve Nash got signed away, and that opportunity was there, that there's an opportunity for a Harden trade. It's more about the opportunity. Like, I don't want to wait for that. I'd rather, if I have the chance to be bad and go get a high draft pick, I'd rather get a high draft pick. Because I've watched 10 years of the Sixers floating in middle ground.
I also want you guys to know that if you're listening to this podcast right now, that we were talking about what we were going to talk about on today's show, and we were discussing it like we do in our email chain, our text messaging chain, and we were going to talk about young cores, and I was like, no Sixers talk. For the love of God, no Sixers talk.
And we already hit Sixers. 2 minutes in and we hit Sixers.
You guys had to attack the intro quote. This is your fault.
Now, this is Kevin's fault, because every day when I get into work, I get my daily what happened with the Sixers the night before briefing at like 4:45 in the morning.
That's always fun.
I get really excited when the Sixers win basketball games.
We beat the Wizards, yeah.
Whether or not they win or they lose, I come in and Kevin's always talking to me about Joel Embiid.
Be allowed to be spoiled, and then I can talk about the Suns.
I mean, I can. It doesn't matter so much now, because I understand we're going to lose every game. There's no excitement anymore.
Well, you know, and that brings... Well, okay, never mind, because that's going to be a sort of a topic for the later on in the episode.
All right, well, we'll get to it.
And you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
I'm bald, don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuczak.
I want to apologize to absolutely nobody. Hashtag Grind City.
Dude, Marc Gasol.
Yeah, Marc Gasol.
Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
Dude, that was the funniest thing. Dude, tribute to Conor McGregor.
Yeah, it was great.
That
was
you guys awesome. Watch that game?
Clips. I didn't
amazing.
Get to see the whole
Marc Gasol hit like, what, 4 or 5?
That was one of the three. Yeah.
Mike Conley hit 7?
Dude, Marc Gasol this season has hit 15 3-pointers. He hit 12 in his entire career going into this season.
Nice.
The other night, Brooke Lopez shot 11 3-pointers.
But like, why?
Jeremy Lin's out. Who else is going to shoot at that point?
And his defense, he made 4. That's decent.
What about Booker? Booker's... I'd rather him shoot threes than...
He's doing well. But regardless, like, Brooke Lopez should maybe be taking a corner three now and again. Not chucking... Dude, no one needs to shoot 11 threes in a game. Like, Steph Curry doesn't need to be shooting 11 threes.
But he did. And he made 11... No, he shot 17 and made 13. 13.
No, yeah, Steph Curry can shoot 11 in a game, but yeah, no, the three-point revolution for centers is real. I mean, and what, like, else is there to say? And that was a big shot by Marc Gasol. That was essentially a game winner.
Well, and that's why he did the little, well, little it ended up shimmy, being, no, it ended whatever up being you want to call that.
Well, the Conor McGregor
one.
Yeah,
walk. I then tweeted, which apparently is a not popular opinion, Marc Gasol shimmy is better than Steph Curry shimmy. People didn't really agree too much.
Oh, I mean, I think so completely.
Well, but the Marc Gasol thing is more paying homage, though. At least the Steph shimmy he created.
Here's the thing, though. So, just according to NBA.com, Marc Gasol, three-point percentage, 41%.
Is he their best three-point shooter?
I'm sure Vince Carter probably might have a high one up.
Dude,
there.
Vince He's Carter had 30 points the other night.
We hit twice. He did 30 points twice, and in between he had a 17... Or no, he had over 20 points in two games, and in between he had a 17-point game.
Yeah, Vince Carter, Chandler Parsons, like 40 years is back. Old. He's starting to get back in the swing of things. I like Memphis, man. Memphis is a really good team. There's a I had them at four in our previews and such, and you know, if they stay healthy, they can... I wouldn't want to play Memphis in the playoffs, put it that way.
I wouldn't want to play Memphis in the playoffs. I think, because I don't have the standings in front of me right now, but I think that Memphis is below the Lakers, and so...
No, Memphis is above the Lakers again. They jumped them. Memphis is sitting at 5 right now. They're 7-5. Houston is 7-5, and then the Jazz and Lakers are both 7-6.
So I was watching... I guess the broader point is I look at Memphis, I'm like, this team's good. I look at the Lakers, and I'm like, this team's going to fizzle out.
Well, the Lakers, I mean, we're going to get into the Lakers, and that's something we'll talk about after news. I mean, this is going to be such a LA-centric episode, so we're going to be talking a lot of Clippers and Lakers.
Well, this is a part of the episode where we like to give you guys homage for giving us homage by leaving us a review on iTunes, and this week we have one from...
Yeah, we got a review from Sweden this week. This is our second review from Sweden, so shout out to Sweden one time. It's by Phil Smith. I apologize if I said that wrong. My Swedish accent is not exactly the best. But the title of this review is An Awesome Compliment to the Insiders. It's a 5-star review. It says, the Drive and Dish podcast seems to aim towards creating a relaxed atmosphere of a couple of knowledgeable buddies jabbering about basketball, and they succeed. If you're after something other than the Zach Lowe's and Adrian Wojnarowski's as a compliment to your basketball podcast, these guys are the way to go. Funny, well-researched, and incredibly in sync, the Drive and Dish is easily my third favorite basketball podcast, my Chris Bosh to Wade and LeBron, if you like. Keep it up.
I feel like we have read this one before. Or did we just get another one that was super comparable?
Super comparable.
We haven't read this.
They lost me when they said in sync, because then I was just thinking of boy band puns.
Yeah, and then I was thinking about Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really got off topic there. I was trying to think of a good joke.
You guys both took it there?
Yeah. That's where I went. Yeah. I can't help it. I'm sorry.
I was hoping to come up with a funny joke about in sync.
That's exactly what I was trying to do, but I don't have any. There's none there.
All right, well, this was a really nice review, so thank you. We appreciate this. Again, shout out to Sweden one time. This was thoughtful. It was well thought out. No, it understands creative. What we're trying to do.
To be the
boy band of basketball podcast.
No, not the boy band of basketball podcast. We are the Chris Bosh to the Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. We are the third best.
Right. We're not the Justin Timberlake hero in the boy band. We're the backups.
Well,
singer
I feel like we can't be a boy band. There's only three of us. We need like five of us to be a boy band.
Well, and also, like, is Woj's podcast really all that good? I gotta tell you.
Oh,
like, I realize that boy. He's like, Woj is quality and everything he does is quality, but listening to the podcast is just boring.
JJ Redix is my favorite from the Vertical Network. I'll
completely agree.
I haven't listened to JJ's in a bit, I'll be honest. I really do look forward to the starters drop, and now that they've started doing the Twitter show on Tuesdays and then uploading that as a podcast on Tuesdays, which pretty much resembles a drop, so it's like they got two now going, so it's like the second drop, which is, they're both good.
Yeah, speaking of Twitter shows, we should get on that bandwagon.
Yeah, there's just a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff we got to figure out.
Yeah. Did you guys watch Nate Duncan's and...
I did not get Damian to see it.
Not the entire thing. I watched part of it.
Was it good?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, obviously, Nate and Danny are very qualified. They know their stuff. I feel like it's tough for them because they're so active during games that they kind of tweet out all their material. So if you're following them on Twitter... You know, it becomes, well, that, obviously it's a little different, but like you kind of see what they've said already.
It's kind of the same thing with the starters. If you watch their show during or after the game or anything like that, a lot of what they say just translates to their Friday drop or something like that. A lot of their opinions stay the same, obviously.
Right. Well, I mean, they should.
Yeah.
for the most part. I was just surprised when I saw Danny and Nate's Twitter show that they had like the nice backdrop and like the Twitter thing, and like there was really
they went all out.
Yeah, yeah, setup was good.
Uh-huh. See, if I do it, I want to have like a, and I don't know if you guys know what this is, but like a switching board, so that we can like have two cameras, one on each, and then I can do like a side by side, and then you guys can actually be looking at each other, but it'll look like you're on the same side. And then
I feel like, well, where would you be?
Behind the board, switching and doing all that.
Be the producer.
Literally, the thing is, like, with that, you need somebody back there switching and moving, and but then you need two cameras, right, and you need two mics, and you need a board, and then that board needs to go into it's. I'm boarding people.
And two periscopes.
Not two. You just need one. It's a lot going on.
If we were going to do a Twitter show, I feel like we'd have to do it in the pillow fort. Like, that would be the ultimate representation of who we are as the Drive and Dish podcast.
Well, the problem is the lighting.
I feel like us having a janky setup, though, would be like the ultimate representation of our character.
Our character's not janky setups.
Well, no, okay, it's not janky setups, but it's like, look at how we record right now. Like, we're in it, we're not professional, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
we're
can probably hear the dishwasher in the background.
Yeah, you turn on the loud ass dishwasher before we came to podcast. Man,
it's
you were like, hold on, let me hit the on button now.
You gotta get the chores done.
It's cleaning day, man. I got stuff to do.
You couldn't have hit the on button later.
No, it's stuff to do.
No, but like,
I'm
thinking,
gonna wash them.
This intro is really long.
Yeah.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
Well, maybe it's a sign. Seth Curry's latest shoe is doing so poorly that it's lowered Under Armour's stock prices. And this kid just can't catch a break. Chandler Parsons to miss a few more weeks after suffering a bone bruise in the left knee. And the Pelicans have waived Archie Goodwin. Speaking of the Pelicans, Jrue Holiday is back, and so far he's killing it, averaging 20 points and 8 assists and a steal per game. Mark Cuban has ended his ban on ESPN reporters. It's a really interesting story on the argument for reporters over automated game summaries that ESPN has been using for teams with not as much fan interest. It's a huge debate within the basketball community, the NBA, WA, and others. If you have a chance, Google it. Also, if you have a chance, go back and watch the last 5 seconds of the Raptors-Kings game. To put this in perspective for you, Dwayne Casey smashes clipboard, Kyle Lowry said no comment 3 times, and Patrick Patterson tweeted, quote, looking forward to the apology from the NBA, even though it won't do shit for the outcome. Hashtag haha, hashtag Raptors, unquote. Official comment from the NBA is that the shot clock malfunction, and they timed Ross's shot, and it wasn't released in time for the basket to count. And shout out to Marshall Plumlee. Ball really is life for that kid who was called up from the D-League to play for the Knicks on Sunday. He sprinted, took a train, and paid a cabbie $60 to run a red light to make it to the game. Your NBA scoring leaders right now, Anthony Davis sits at the top, 31.7 points. Russell Westbrook, number 2, 31.6. DeMar DeRozan, 31.4. James Harden, 28.7. And Damian Lillard rounds out the top 5 at 28 points per game. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So as I said in the intro, this is going to be a bit of an LA-themed episode, if you will. It's not, you know, we're not going to entirely do LA, but it's going to be the majority of it. And so we'd be remiss not to mention the Clippers first, a team that we haven't talked about in a few weeks that, as of us recording this episode, the last game they played was against the Kings. Kings fought pretty valiantly. Clippers held on by 6 points.
Well, they had a good lead, and then Clippers sort of let it dwindle.
Yeah,
Kings, so I think to a point with the score of that game, it didn't really tell the full picture.
Yeah, Kings came back strong. Mm-hmm. They really gave it a run there at the end, but the Clippers held on, won by 6. They are a league best 11-2 right now. And one of the revelations this week is that Chris Paul got LASIK in the offseason.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working so far.
Well, so here's the... Just listen to this before we get too into specific players on the team. I went through the NBA.com rankings for teams and anything category-wise that a team can be ranked for. And I wrote down everything the Clippers are top 5 in. Okay, ready? They are 3rd in points per game. They are 3rd in offensive rating. They are 2nd in defensive rating. They are number 1 in net rating. They are number 1 in steals per game. They are number 4 in field goal percentage. They are number 3 in three-point percentage. And a more advanced number, they are number 1 in player impact estimate as a team. And for pull-up points per game, they are 3rd in the league.
Not done. They're number 2 in defensive rebounding. They're number 4 overall rebounding. At they're grabbing 45 a game. And they are number 1 in their free throw rate attempt at 34%.
I mean, the defensive rating, they're 93%. 5.0 right now. It's the best in the league, honestly.
Are you just trying to chime in with a stat?
No, I mean, you guys took like every single
stat. We grabbed every stat.
They are 17th in offensive rebounding.
Yeah, I was looking for the top five, right, kind of right. Staying away from everything.
They're number
else.
15 in pace, though, and I found that interesting.
Now, I'm not saying that everyone on that team's old, but for older players and a team that, I mean, constructed of those guys, you would assume would slow it down with Jordan. I get Chris Paul, you would run out, but I mean, I feel like with Jordan and Griffin, you may want to slow it down and work the big man game.
Well, and
right?
I feel like everybody's been talking about their offense, and rightfully so. They've been on fire this season, but the story to me has been their defense, really. I mean, we mentioned the defensive rating and a number of the other metrics there. We know how elite DeAndre Jordan is defensively. There's many, many all NBA defensive teams showing that over the past few years. Chris Paul, we know, is among one of the best defenders when it comes to guys at the point guard position. You know, they've got Bob Mute is playing fantastic this season for them, the small forward. You know, he's been known throughout the league for his defense. He is chipping in on offense too. That's something we can talk about in a little bit. But again, you know, he's one of those guys who can lock down the wing a bit. That's what he's really made his calling card off of as long as he's been in the league. And you know, Blake Griffin too is another guy who I think has really stepped up.
I really noticed with Blake Griffin, his handles has gotten a lot better, which I found ironic because he was out for a hand injury. Right. And he has really good handles. He's doing all this like behind the back stuff, these crazy passes. Like, it's really working out for them.
Well, Blake Griffin's always been a really good passer, though.
But you add that with the handles that he has now, and it's just like, oh my gosh, where did
this
come
from? A lot of the time, like, he gets a rebound and he's one taking the ball up the court.
Which we talked about when we talked about the Trailblazers with Plumlee. It's almost like instant offense. Same with Draymond Green. The second he gets that ball, they're pushing it up the court already, which then in turn relates to the pace of the game.
So I had a theory with this team, right?
Okay.
Is that obviously their bench is the Clippers bench, for example, is shooting 42% from the floor, and they're outscoring opponents by 15 points per 100 possessions, and only starting rotations from the Clippers, Rockets, and Trailblazers are actually outscoring opponents by more. Mm-hmm. So the Clippers bench is the third best lineup in the NBA,
which is interesting because the problem with the Clippers that we've always had is their bench was garbage.
But here's the theory: is that last year the Golden State Warriors were obviously the best team in the league for the majority of the regular season. They lost Mo Spates.
And now Spates is on
Mo
the Clippers.
Mo Spates goes to the Clippers.
Hey.
And all of a sudden, so I ask you, gentlemen, was Mo Spates actually the key to the Golden State Warriors' success? And that he was really the glue piece, and it was never Draymond Green or Steph Curry or anybody else. It was always Mo Spates.
I feel like he is part of it. I don't think you can number it down to one person. But my thinking, too, is I also feel like Austin Rivers has been a big part of it this year. Mm-hmm. His numbers have been pretty impressive. I'm actually pulling him up right now. Leading that second unit, we saw him in the playoffs last year and how he kind of won the respect of the league, I guess, is how I always refer to that, you know, beating he took, I guess. He kept getting hit pretty hard.
Justin, do you remember that tweet that was just before the season started and somebody said, I wonder if the Clippers GM just said, gee, we're a Raymond Felton away from a championship.
I do remember that.
Yeah. In hindsight, Raymond Felton's been playing pretty good.
Raymond Felton has been playing very good, but I don't know if that's the person you need to go look for. You know, back to it, I think Spates is a part of it. You take him out of a winning organization and bring him to an organization that's got the chemistry already and stuff like that. Like,
the bench
it does translate.
Is just deeper this year. Like, the problem with the Clippers in the past has been it's been so top-heavy. You have to rely on Chris Paul, and you have to rely on Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan in your starting lineup to put in heavy minutes, and then you put in these secondary units, and they can't get anything done. You know, that's been a bit different this year. I'd like to see a little bit more consistent shooting out of Austin Rivers and Wes Johnson. I think that, you know, everybody's off to a pretty strong start, but those two, I think Austin Rivers is shooting like 20.7% from three right now. So, you know, that's a bit of a concern, but these are minor things. You know, they're getting contributions from nine guys.
So, do you guys remember when we were talking about defensive box plus minus a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
And we were kind of saying what the metric is for a defensive box plus minus that is truly elite? Do you guys remember what that was?
Two,
anything,
right?
Two or higher. Do you know how many players on the Clippers have a defensive box plus minus of 2.7 or greater?
Six.
2.7.
I'm guessing six.
Five. No.
And is it all the starters?
I don't have the list in front of me. But and then the really incredible part is that the other player right below that's like a 1.8, which is still like super elite.
Yeah.
But five of their players have a defensive box plus minus of 2.7 or greater.
The thing that really stuck out to me is Chris Paul's efficiency. His offensive efficiency, 113.9, defensive 89.6, which leaves him at a net rating of 24.4.
Well, and it's just he's 31 years old, and he's having a career season right now.
Yeah.
47% from three-point percentage.
Can we stop pretending like that's an old age?
I mean, in the NBA land, that is an old age.
In NBA land. The other thing with Chris Paul, he's getting 5 rebounds a game. Like, yeah. That's huge for Chris Paul, who's a shorter guy. 3 steals per game, field goal percentage 46, like we were just saying.
What's impressive about him, too, is he's averaging 18 points a game, and his assist rate's 44%. So his assist rate is 44%, and he's averaging 18 points a game.
Dude, his assist to turnover ratio is 5-1 right now.
it's almost comparable to Emmanuel Mudiay.
Okay, I bring up the question that I saw floating around.
Hold on, anybody listening right now?
I don't think it's done yet.
Okay, moving on. The other thing I wanted to bring up, 44% of Blake Griffin's shots are coming from between 15 and 7 feet. The players he's defending are shooting 4.1% worse when he's guarding them, which is also pretty impressive.
I guess my question is, they're 11-2 right now. It's obviously working right now.
Hold on, you don't want us to just keep throwing out random stats?
Well, I was going to say, we've really, really covered the stats today, guys.
Well, I wasn't done. Hold on.
No, we're not done.
Okay,
there's so many more.
Yeah, going off of Blake Griffin, he's also shooting 70% within 3 feet of the basket.
Yeah.
Also, Mbah Mute, 92% of his 3-point shots are coming from the corner, and he's draining 44% of them.
Dude, Mbah Mute shooting 56% from the field this year.
Yeah,
that's nuts.
I mean, on like 5 shots, but it's still really impressive.
That's fine. It's efficient, and it's good enough to keep. The worry with the starting lineup was that, you know, for as great defensively as Mbah Mute is that too much of a black hole on offense. And it hasn't been this year. Like, it's been one of the big things is he has been able to give them good minutes on both sides of the ball.
Well, that's the thing is, like, so you have these teams. And I was thinking about this when I was watching the Clippers. How many teams can just have Mbah Mute starting on their team and still be any resemblance of good? It takes a special kind of
the Warriors.
Yeah, you have to have like a team where they have so many players that have to have the ball all the time in order to have a player.
It has to be a system type deal. I mean, it's like Tony Allen with the Grizzlies back when Tony Allen was really at his peak. You know, they had enough weapons around that where they can hide the fact that Tony Allen kind of is a black hole on offense, but his elite defensive abilities you just can't deny.
Have we? Do you guys remember talking about Tony Allen and how he defends?
Yes.
How he waves his hands in the air when he runs at people.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
The other, you know, actually, just speaking of like waving your hands and stuff. The only thing that bothers me with the Clippers, and it bothers me with LeBron too, is anytime there's a foul call,
they just complain.
It's like the most wrong call they've ever heard, and it could be the most blatant foul, and at least 2 people on the Clippers are going to be like, oh, what was that? Why?
Oh, dude,
and I'm
like,
guys.
The Clippers have got to stop complaining.
Holy
man.
Hell,
like, they're still doing it, and I don't, but they do it on every single
everything.
Call.
That's why it bothers me.
Well,
the
Clips have a rep of that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's well known around the league. People do think the Clippers whine a lot. Regardless, you know, when we talked about the Clippers in the beginning of the season, it was one of those situations where if it didn't succeed this year, it could have been the end of that core as we know it. They're off to an 11-2 start. I guess how much of this do you guys think is sustainable? And can they realize? I mean, to me, they're the only other team. I love the Spurs, too, and I love the Grizzlies. But to me, they were the only team I felt this year that could even challenge the Warriors. You know, where are you guys feeling? We're 13 games into the season. You know, where are you guys feeling about the Clippers
They're the only other team in the NBA right now, apart from the Bulls, that has a top-5 offense and a top-5 defense.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get really sports cliche-y here, but defense wins championships.
Mm-hmm.
Defense travels on the road. Offense doesn't. I think that if they can keep their defensive prowess up, that's going to be the key. And really, this bench, you know, it's as impressive as it is now. Obviously, it's going to get whittled down a bit in the playoffs. I mean, you know, can they challenge the Warriors? You know, who knows?
I think they could challenge them.
It kind of feels like last year, right? Where we're like...
The Thunder challenged them, you know what I mean?
Well, the Thunder did, but, you know, can the Spurs do it all season was sort of the narrative.
Yeah.
And so I feel like all season we're like going to try and hype up a team that maybe can do it when everyone knows and no one can.
Well, and let's be honest, we've been here before with the Clippers in a sense that they do good and then they get to the playoffs and then they're just kind of subpar.
I mean, that's what sunk them last year is they, you know, Chris Paul broke his hand.
And Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
No,
so
I agree.
So that's the biggest thing. And the Clippers have got to stay healthy. If the Clippers are fully healthy in the playoffs, I genuinely do think they can make some noise. Am I going to pick them over the Warriors? No, I'm not. But I think they can compete with them.
Bringing it down one step, I guess. Are the Clippers better than the Spurs?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also heard some rumors, and we're going to get into trade rumors later on in this episode, but I also heard some rumors of people saying that the Clippers should really look at Omar Caspi as a guy to come off the bench to help with the scoring punch from the bench. Even though the bench is already good, adding him to that would really put it over the top.
Omar Caspi would be a good player for them to get.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if they're just looking for scoring, they do have Jamal Crawford.
No, I agree. And I actually saw people saying, do you trade Jamal Crawford? And they're like, there's no reason to trade him. Like, if you're going to win, you're going to win with Jamal Crawford.
It's funny because that was such a thing.
But he's always been re-signed. And you know, mm-hmm. He's been there as long as the rest of that core has. He's a part of it.
36 years old.
Yeah.
I think he's the only player that's won back-to-back six-man of the year awards, and he's won three in his career.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Jamal Crawford.
So I was looking online, and there was, you know, there's all these polls. There's always polls on the different, like, Facebook basketball boards and things. They're just ridiculous. But anyway, one of them was who's the best point guard in the league, and I got to tell you, like, the little amount that Chris Paul was voted for in that poll, and I don't have the results in front of me, but it was like, you know, Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook were getting like 80%, and then Chris Paul like 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are these people watching?
Yeah, well, they're
everybody's caught
they're
up
looking for scoring.
It's the hype right now, though. It's the narrative. And in the case of Curry, he is a back-to-back MVP. Like, it's pretty tough to argue against that resume right now. Steph Curry is the guy, and he's been one of the guys in the league the past few years.
Well, I get it shouldn't be that
lopsided.
Also recency bias. Look at Westbrook. Chris Paul's been doing this so long, but that it's been quiet. Westbrook's numbers are outrageous, like, mm-hmm. because he's the guy on that team, so he puts up these gaudy stat lines every night. If you look at the raw numbers, will look like Westbrook is a better player than Chris Paul.
Watching the Thunder Rockets game was so much fun.
Oh, that last play where, like, Westbrook,
they almost got called for a 5 seconds inbound penalty.
Oh,
like,
dude.
It was magical.
Oh, my God. It was like everything about that was like, and why I love Westbrook.
Going into that, I was like, man, you know, this is a really cool thing because Harden and Westbrook are like the number one scorers on the team. And they're going to go at it. And Roberson did a good job of slowing Harden down. And in general, the Thunder's defense, the Rockets didn't score it for 6 minutes in the fourth. 6 whole minutes, they did not score a point. The Thunder just outplayed the Rockets, and it was a close game. But man, that last play was so exciting.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
Harden's on fire right now.
He is on fire too. That's not taking away from
everybody's talking about that. That's neither here nor there. You're listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. So the other team that resides in the Staples Center is one that is caught a bunch of attention on early this year. As of recording this, they are 8th in the Western Conference. They are leaps and bounds more fun to watch and seem to be improved over last year's Kobe Love Fest, which quietly was not really the best thing for the team, but you got to do it sometimes for Kobe. And Byron Scott just being awful every level. The Lakers.
Talking about that, everyone was talking about, was Kobe the reason these guys weren't able to kind of break through last year,
yeah,
or at least impress?
Oh, 100%.
You look at it, Kobe's ISO plays last year, he had a 32% usage rate, and 32% of his shots were two-pointers with a 19% frequency in ISO situations. He's fifth in the league for ISO.
It was the Kobe Bryant.
What else would Kobe do?
So Walton comes in, and he makes this rule that they have to pass the ball 300 times a game.
He also, the player with the highest minutes on that team is getting 28. So, like, he's, like, playing everybody.
Speaking of playing everybody, the person who's not doing that, and we can move off this, but Tom Thibodeau is running Wiggins and Towns.
Yeah, Townsend.
So many minutes already.
They crushed the Sixers the other night, and Townsend, Wiggins still played, like, 40-some minutes.
Yeah, that's a side thought. We can move on.
I really hope they don't retire by their 30.
I just wish that for my fantasy team, he would do that with Ricky Rubio.
Well, but, you know.
No, but back to Justin's point that Walton is playing everybody. I mean, one of the most impressive things of the Lakers, because we're going to get into the young core in a little bit. There's a lot I want to talk about with Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram. But that second unit of Brandon Ingram, Lou Will, Tariq Black, Jordan Clarkson, and Larry Nance Jr. has been really good for them this year.
Well, and just talking about the older guys, Lou Will and surprisingly Nick Young, those, you know, the two guys that I guess
What did Zach Lowe tweet? It was like Nick Young is trying alarmingly hard on defense this year.
And that's because he, like, Walton is getting them to buy into the system. And it's surprising because I think it has part to do with it. Everybody's seeing minutes. So everybody's seeing minutes. They're all buying into the system.
When they get out of huddles, they all did their high five or whatever.
Well, that's because Meta World Peace scored the three and said it. So now it's like a thing. I think also Meta World Peace being like a mentor to them, I guess, is actually kind of.
2016 is the weirdest year of all time.
It all started with Harambe.
It did. But so what they were talking about is these young guys came in, and I think it was on CBS Sports. I want to give the right article the credit, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But
well, it wasn't Zach Harper.
No, it wasn't. But they were talking about how those young guys came in. Yes, they've heard of Kobe. They've seen games of him playing and stuff like that. But they come in, they're a year, maybe two in, and Kobe's been injured, so he's not around shoot-arounds, he's not around practices. His last year, he wasn't really able to do too much, like, practicing with the team, because he was just, like, trying to stay good enough to finish the season. And so these guys never really saw his work ethic and how hard he was trying and really how he was pushing these, you know, these players every game. And so Meta World Peace coming in, being a guy who's healthy enough to talk about it, Walton being their coach, actually playing with them in games and stuff like that in the offseason, like, they're seeing these guys who have been through it and know how to do it, where they knew Kobe could do it, they just hadn't seen it from him.
Well, that and Luau Deng, too.
Minutes for them at the power forward.
Well,
you know,
he should. He's their highest paid player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's...
Mozgov hasn't been doing too bad.
Well, with the issue with the Lakers has not been their ability to gather young talent. There's a lot of young talent on this team. I mean, you can argue that they don't have the potential superstar core that the Timberwolves have or that the Sixers potentially could have. But in terms of the depth of it, there's more of it. I mean, when you have Randle, when you have Russell, when you have Clarkson, when you have Ingram in the fold, like, they've done a really good job of hitting on all these guys. And, you know, Julius Randle, if we talk about his evolution this year, I mean, this is a guy that Luke Walton and Pau Gasol have now both compared to a Draymond Green-type player.
I think he had a triple-double the other night.
You know, who?
Julius Randle.
Yeah, 17, 14, and 10 against the Nets.
A lot of Julius Randle's development, like if you look at the stats as compared to last year, is that he's frankly shooting the ball really close to the rim.
Yeah.
As opposed, he's playing within his game, and I think that's made a really big impact on his development.
Yeah, 67% at the rim right now. You know, really doing a good job. His true shooting percentage is 60.9%. You know, it's just over 14 points a game, so he's getting involved.
I think he's taking I don't know, it's what, like 14% of his shots are three-pointers or something, but mm-hmm. It's way down from last year, so most of his shots are within 9 feet of the basket.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta love the energy he plays with, too. That was one of the, you know, that was one of the highs on him when he came out of college, and, you know, on the defensive effort, on the defensive side of the ball, he's constantly aggressive. You know, he's finding ways to get into the paint and finish there, and, you know, to what Tim said, he's playing within his game this year. He's playing a smart game. He helps move the ball around. You know, he plays a solid role that the Lakers need him to do. And with him and Deng, you know, the Deng signing still confuses me a little bit, but I understand it within the roles that they have where they are. You know, they're giving them constant good minutes at the power forward position.
If I were to tell you they would be second in points per game in the league in this offseason, would you believe me?
Well, their point differential, though, it's like 0.9 or something. And so, you know, when you look at teams, and you don't necessarily need to always look at their wins and losses mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. You really want to look at the point differential. And the Lakers, they're getting wins,
the differential is not
right,
there.
Right, but the differential is not there, and I just, you know, I don't think it's sustainable with this team. I think it's a good, it's a fun story, especially after Kobe, and the Lakers are kind of fun to watch, again, which is good for the league. But at the end of the day, like, this team is not going to be one of the teams that makes the playoffs.
It's young, it's inexperienced. I mean, they have some good wins. They beat Golden State, they beat Atlanta,
they always beat Golden State.
They do always beat Golden State, which is really weird. But it's got a, well, they have a tough schedule coming up, though. They lost to San Antonio last night as of recording this. Played well, but just couldn't have, you know, San Antonio just overpowered them at the end. They got Chicago, who's playing really well right now. They've got Oklahoma City, never an easy game. They've got a home and home with Golden State, so, you know, maybe they'll go. If they win, if they sweep that home and home, like, that's ridiculous. They'd be 3-0 against the Warriors at that point, potentially.
Well, and really, that ended Steph Curry's 3-point streak, and then he went out and, like, hit 13 the next night.
Right.
Yeah. It was awesome. And they were saying, is it against his brother and the Pelicans? And they were like, is it impressive that he did it against the Pelicans? And I'm like, yeah, in general, that's an impressive stat. But if he did it against the freaking, like, Clippers, it would have been like, oh, holy crap. The one person we haven't really hit on too much and how his defensive numbers look promising is Brandon Ingram. Net rating of 6.5, defensive rating 98.8.
Well, and that's been the biggest surprise to me so far with Brandon Ingram is, you know, when you go in with the, we know Brandon Ingram had so many talents on offense, and with Brandon Ingram being skinny as he is, like, he's got to, you know, he's just got to bulk up a little bit. He's 19. Right. You didn't really expect the instant contributions to come on the defensive end, but I mean, he's got that 7'3 wingspan and he's using it.
Well, and I read that Walton was pushing defense and getting better on defense even in like summer workouts and even before the draft when he came to just do like a pre-workout type stuff. They really were pushing defense on him and telling him, you have this huge wingspan, it's all about the angles for you, like, just learn the right angles to get on these shots, and yes, these guys are going to push you out of the way, don't fight it, just get to the angle and so get in front of that shot, and it's working. Players are shooting 5.4% worse when he's guarding them.
You know who has a really large wingspan?
Who?
Glenn Rice the III.
Really?
44-inch.
Yeah, no, that's pretty.
It's a big wingspan.
Yep.
The Lakers were an absolute dumpster fire on defense last year, so I think, you know, Luke Walton holding them accountable defensively and across the board, and just to see the immediate returns they've had in that department is an encouraging sign if you're a Lakers fan going forward. Again, I think everybody, you know, enjoy the run now. I do think the Lakers are going to fizzle off a little bit. It's still very young. It's still very inexperienced. The talent levels aren't there. Injuries are going to happen. But it's been a fun team to watch so far.
Well,
it's a fun... The Lakers are in that category. Like I mentioned earlier, with the Timberwolves and with the Sixers and with a few of these other young teams that are just loaded on talent and look to be great going forward.
Well, let me ask the question everybody's wondering. They're sitting 7-6 right now. They're tied with the Jazz for the 8th and 7th spot in the West. Do they skimp by and stay in the playoffs?
No, this year? But who's behind them?
Timberwolves and Trailblazers.
No, the Blazers will get in over them. The Blazers
are terrible. Right,
you know, I was looking at it and I
knew this was going to happen.
I think it has a point to do with and I didn't even know this was a stat that was recorded, but it's miles ran on defense, and the Trailblazers lead the league in that. And it's just like, they're getting so winded, and it's like, guys, maybe at some point, maybe don't play man-to-man, because that's what's, you know, that's what's running your team around this court, I'm assuming, because if you're playing zone, you're not running around as much.
Well, I mean, that, and they also, you know, they're guard stopping dribble penetration is going to be CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard,
right? You know, and that's not going to work. They can't get past the screen, which has still been a problem.
Well, and Lillard too. I mean, Lillard called them out and challenged them. He said they're like, he straight up said, he's like, yeah, we're playing terrible right now.
Well, maybe he could
be a part of that.
Yeah. Well, they lost again last night.
We're going to get so many trails, but
well, no, they lost again last night to the Pelicans too. Like, it's a problem right now. They need to turn it around. That being said, I do think Portland gets in over the Lakers. You know, the Timberwolves should get better. I don't know. Or the bottom of the West is just not really that inspiring right now.
The Mavericks, Pelicans,
the Mavs,
Suns,
the Mavs
Kings,
are just injured
Nuggets.
As hell right
you know
now.
the Kings could do it.
What?
I'm just trying to think of a team that could do it.
Yeah, like the Kings could. No, I could see the Kings realistically jumping the Lakers. Like, there's enough there where they'll start putting some games together. I think the Nuggets could I don't. The Timberwolves could, if especially if Wiggins keeps taking the leap, that's something else.
Wiggins has been on fire.
Well, when what was it last year? Was it at this point last year that eight of the 10 teams that made the playoffs or something? I can't remember exactly who. Yeah, 7 of the 8 teams that made the playoffs in the West were already in the playoff picture at this point last year.
So if we were to use that justification, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Spurs, the Thunder, the Grizzlies, the Rockets, the Jazz. That's like, you can make an argument for that. I also saw someone.
Jay Barea is out, man, for the Mavericks to kind of, you know, add insult to injury on what's been a
month, and he's been one of their, we talked about him a few weeks ago. He's been one of their better players. Dallas.
That should never be said.
I mean, Dallas is going to get Dirk and Darren Williams back next week, but they have one. Seth Curry is literally their only guard right now, and you know, Harrison Barnes is playing well for the most part, but that's really, they need to get Harrison Barnes to assist other people.
You saw Chandler Parsons saying he would have taken way less than $98 million to stay.
The piece that Tim McMahon did on him and Mark Cuban's relationship is really good. I don't know if you guys have read that yet. It was making its rounds on basketball Twitter, and it definitely.
One thing I want to look into, and I don't have the stats up right now, so I'm not in a spot that I can really compare it. But I saw a lot of people comparing Wiggins' defensive improvements to Kawhi Leonard, and I want to see how, you know, in the same year. Not you know, in Kawhi Leonard's, I guess, year three, what they compared defensively, and see if that's actually legit.
I mean, some of that's got to be the eye test, though, right?
Well, I would assume, but I haven't looked into it, so that's going to be my project this week for Thanksgiving.
I was thinking of teams that you have these players, like, for example, Mike Conley or Anthony Davis, where these players, they want all of the money. Like, literally, they want all of the money,
right?
And then they get mad at their teams when their teams aren't any good.
But
It's starting to irritate me with these players where they take all this money and then they're like, but my team sucks. Well, why don't you not take this money?
If you didn't take that much money, you could get another good player, which will actually kind of segue a little bit into our next topic, which is going to be trade rumors.
Trade rumors.
And it's going to be, I guess we're going to approach it more as, I have 5.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you guys, is this legit or is this clickbaity?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because,
I'm ready.
Dear Lord, looking up trade rumors.
There's a lot of trade rumors right now.
And it'll be like businessinquire.com. Right. DeMarcus Cousins going to the Warriors. Right. And I'm just like, what?
Fire the cannons.
Well, and I just want to state, too, that neither myself nor Kevy has
Yeah, you haven't heard any of these. Okay, so the first one, and I've also written down the websites.
Okay.
So we can put these places on blast if we think they are junk. The first one's coming from sportsrageous.com.
Oh, I can already tell you it's junk. God, I hate those things.
It's basically like, if it's not from like ESPN or Woj or Basketball Insiders.
But we'll look at the generalization of the idea and if maybe both teams should consider. All right. In a suggested trade scenario, the Mavericks send Devin Harris, Justin Anderson, J.J. Barea, and a second-round pick to Orlando for Nikola Vukovic. Here's the reasoning. Vuk will definitely give a boost to the Mavericks' offense. Having a low post scorer could help space the floor for their shooters. Also, Dirk could play at his natural position at 4, allows Bismack Biyombo to take on a bigger role, trusting Zimmerman with a spot in the rotation.
Well, no. This is no for both teams. For one, the Magic really need offense.
Right.
And the Magic could really be playing Vooch more than they are. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't make sense. Two is that, the Mavericks just got Bogut, man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What would they do without Bogut?
Well, and Bogut's been pretty terrible so far, to put it bluntly. So, but the thing with the Magic, too, on the other side is like, do I really want Biyombo in a bigger role? Does that fix my problem?
No, it doesn't at all.
It helps your defense, like, but that's not
the Magic
the
don't need to help defense.
Well,
the
whole, they do need help, but
the whole reason, like, they just, Biyombo,
here's the thing, though.
Still doesn't make any sense to me.
Here's the thing, though.
All.
Frank Vogel cares more about defense than he cares about offense. So maybe they do this because he cares about defense.
Matt Moore tweeted earlier in the week. He said the Magic are the worst team in the league. Do we agree with that?
No. I think the Magic are pretty terrible.
Mavs are injured, though. The Magic are full strength.
No, the problem with the Magic isn't that they're bad. It's that they're really awful to watch.
What does that mean?
It just means
they're so boring.
It's just not fun basketball.
But that's bad. They don't win either. So what's that? That is the textbook definition of bad.
No, I mean, okay, so...
The Magic are horrible to watch.
Well, I mean, I they are horrible to watch.
They're really, like, it's bad.
It's,
Well, and that's the whole point.
It's like watching the Grizzlies.
No, hold on.
The difference being is that if the Grizzlies wouldn't have been winning.
Right. Because the Grizzlies play, like, this grinded-out style of game, which is right. good basketball, but it's...
But the Grizzlies have, like, Chandler Parsons and Marc Gasol and Mike Conley.
Well, talking about the Grizzlies before, you know what the problem with the Magic, too, is Elfrid Payne's just not a very good player. Man.
No, he can't. His shooting percentage is what, like the second lowest in the league
right
now?
Not even his shooting percentage. I mean, he just isn't running offense. Like Ricky Rubio gets by running an offense.
Right.
I mean, what does Elfrid Payne do?
Yeah, the problem is you look at four of their five positions essentially can't get offense because you've got Aaron Gordon out of position. So unless you're playing Vooch or
they're starting
Fournier,
Jeff Green now.
Yeah, and it's just bad times in Orlando. Rob Hennigan, what does he do? Like, what is it? All I've been hearing about the Magic is they're the model way to rebuild without tanking. But what do the Magic really have in the last 5 years?
Evan Fournier, man.
Super Mario.
Mm-hmm. Herzogna, shooting 40% from three.
See?
Yeah, he's got to get more minutes.
Well, that's on the coach.
I'm not sure you want him getting more minutes.
All right, we'll move on. According to CBSSports.com, the Thunder are rumored to be offering the Kings a package that included Cameron Payne for Rudy Gay. Sadly, Cameron Payne broke his foot, so that went away. The question being, do the Thunder continue to look for ways to bring Rudy Gay to the team?
Well, who was it? The Ronnie Price. They waived him.
Mm-hmm.
They've been waiting for Cameron Payne to come back, and when Westbrook is off the floor, the Thunder are so much worse, and a lot of that has to do just because they don't really have a good backup guard.
Well, and
obviously,
so,
Rudy Gay would be an improvement.
Yeah, averaging 21.3 points, shooting 47%, 42% from three. Also gives some veteran experience. The Thunder actually average age is 25.
Yeah, no, they're young. I guess they could always go out and get like Jordan Farmar or something.
You know, I have Jordan Farmar on my NBA 2K team, which I have a lot of fun with because I blow out teams by the fourth quarter, so I put him in, and then my goal is to only score with him for the entire fourth quarter. It works.
Wait, is he the only player? So it's like 1 vs. 5?
No, so like the other players will be out there, but it'll be like, it's just big men to get his rebounds when he misses.
Okay. Why did you pick Jordan Farmar?
He was my very last pick in the draft.
Well, why him?
Because I saw his name and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's always traded around and he's just trying to stay in the league and I feel for him. I'm just going to make him really good in NBA 2K. He's good. He's up to because like in the game, like your stats fluctuate as you have good games. I think I'm have him up to a 78.
Oh, well, that's really
player
good
rating.
that's amazing.
He doesn't miss threes. I'm telling you, in that game, you could just jack threes with Farmar and go in. Should the Thunder look into a trade involving Gay?
I mean, yeah, if you can get Rudy Gay, sure.
Or would you say, I mean...
Because Rudy Gay is a really good player. You want to put players around Russell Westbrook as possible. And, like, at the end of the day, Cameron Payne is expendable.
Well, my thinking with that is, too, is you know for a fact Rudy Gay wants out of Sacramento. So you might be able to lowball a package, I'm guessing. But at the same time, I think his contract's up at the end of the year. So you get him for a one-year rental, I guess.
You could get him back at this point. With that,
with the Thunder
at the cost of Cameron Payne, you maybe could justify the gamble. It's not like Cameron Payne is a necessarily big part of your future.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player, though.
Yeah, no, he's a solid young backup. Like, there's a future for him in the league. I just don't think you need to be held on to him as an untouchable.
Moving on to the next one, Mark Stein tweeted the growing sense in the league that the Suns are determined to move either Bledsoe or Knight before the trade deadline.
Oh, I mean, if they trade somebody, they ain't trading Bledsoe, though.
It's going to be Knight.
I promise you it's Knight.
But that's something you think will happen?
I don't know, who do they trade? If you're going to get a pick, maybe, but I just don't really know.
Well, I guess that's the question. What do the Suns need?
Right,
really?
Which honestly isn't a lot. I mean, because we're still developing Alex Lynn. Regardless of what you think about him, Alex Lynn is a good player at least 40% of the time. We have TJ Warren at the three. We have Eric
Bledsoe. A good player at least 40% of the time. That's the definition of expendable.
We have Eric Bledsoe at the one. You have Devin Booker at the two. We have two power forwards we just drafted. So if you were going to trade Brandon Knight, I'm just not really sure what type of player you're looking
what
for.
What would you be going for?
Well, if you can get a center, I mean, because you could, are you, would you sure, think they try to package Tyson Chandler in a deal with Brandon Knight to get rid of him?
I mean, sure, if you could get a center, but, you know, how many elite level centers are honestly up in the trade?
You're not going to get anybody elite, though, for Brandon Knight.
Then why are you trading him?
Cousins?
Because you need to give other time to your younger guards who are going to be there in the future.
They're all, their guards are getting minutes. They already traded away Archie Goodwin. I mean, player that you're opening up minutes for by trading away Brandon Knight is to give minutes to Leandro Barbosa.
Mm-hmm. And hey, that's not always a bad thing.
No, it's not. I love watching.
No, but why develop him? I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. So you would say the thing you would need is a center, but really, how many?
Yeah, like centers? You know, Giannis, I mean, but Valanciunas isn't up in the trade market, so you can't go trade for him.
No, but what if you went for? I don't know. Like, what if you did try for a Cousins thing?
Sure, if you can trade Brandon Knight and get DeMarcus Cousins,
but you're going to need more than that.
Yeah, you're going to need way more than that.
No, throw in Tyson Chandler. The point is that these really good centers, like, nobody's trading them away, right. So it seems like a mute point.
Do you think the Kings pull the trigger this year? Get rid of?
Why would they?
I don't know, man. The Kings just
My conspiracy theory right now, though, is that John Wall is going to go to Sacramento. They're going to trade and reunite him with Boogie. Yeah, because the Wizards are a mess, dude. Like, I could see the Wizards.
I saw Bradley Beal in a few trade rumors, but I stayed away from him for this.
Well, Bradley Beal, the problem is his value's not really that high right now.
That's kind of why I stayed away from it.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Toronto, Boston, and New York have expressed interest in Omar Caspi. Caspi has expressed he is very disappointed with his situation in Sacramento and has been asked to be moved immediately. After that report came out, Omar Caspi came out saying that is not true. He did meet with the teams, though. His stats last year were 11 points, 5 rebounds, while shooting 40% from 3 in 27 minutes. This year, he is struggling to find 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, I mean, he is a really solid backup player. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a starting caliber player in the league. Mm-hmm. It seems like everybody wants out of Sacramento.
I saw someone writing after reading this, then I looked at teams that might be interested, and someone wrote an article about, and I know we don't want to talk about the Sixers, but talking about how he would be good fit for them coming off the bench, and I'm like, but his problem is he's not seeing enough minutes, so why send him to a team where he's not going to see starter minutes?
Yeah, I'm not sure that the age timeline really worked out, but no, I mean, he'd be really solid on the vast majority of teams, but I do believe that the Kings said they weren't going to look at any trades until they saw how the team looked with Darren Collison back.
Well, we'll see where that goes, but yeah, Toronto, Boston, New York apparently are interested. Also, the Clippers have been rumored in that as well.
Oh, he'd be really good on the Clippers.
That would be the punch, I guess. Last one, Brian Scalabrine released a statement about the rumors he heard Golden State Warriors shopping around Klay Thompson and the Celtics being linked to that.
No, dude, no.
Oh, I saw the full the full Scalabrine rumor is great. The full Scalabrine rumor is insane. It was Boston. Golden State trades Klay to Boston for Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and the Brooklyn first rounder, and then Golden State flips the Brooklyn first rounder to us for Nerlens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think, now granted, this is not going to happen. Like, I don't think this is a realistic
thing. Why trade Klay?
There's no reason to. They don't have another shooting guard other than to get the defense. They have Ian Clark.
They get the defense. You balance the team out. Klay is repetitive at this point.
Well, no, you don't trade Klay.
I agree.
I don't know, man. You can see Klay's looking like he's going downhill. He's drinking during press conferences.
Dude, can we talk about that? We need to talk about that now. This rumor is not important because it's not going to happen. Klay Thompson got the beer like it was cool. It was a course, like, took a sip of it, but the best part to me is before he answered the question, he went, and then answered it.
With a Coors Light.
Right, it's amazing.
Yeah, like, savage. Come on, dude. No one looks cool drinking a Coors Light.
Oh, no, this is great. I love the NBA, man. I love basketball.
I wanted to make a meme where he did that and be like, I remember my first beer.
Oh, the memes are golden already.
Can we all agree, though, that basketball has been better than football this year?
Some of the basketball stuff has been really
exciting. NFL officiating has been really bad this year. Like, really bad.
I've heard nothing
the
but
board.
Complaints about football.
Well,
because
the product, the problem is the calls aren't consistent. Their stance on head shots and head injuries isn't consistent. Like, they need to hire full-time officials. Like, that's the thing, is NFL officials are not full-time employees. Like, they need to hire full-time officials.
Well, they get paid like they are.
Well, they need to get paid more if that's what it takes to get full-time officials. Like, make it happen. The product is
dwindling. I mean,
the NBA will beat the NFL potentially internationally one day. Like, I believe that. The NFL isn't that big outside of the U.S. and Canada and quietly growing in Mexico. Like, it never really caught on
Australia.
In Europe outside of London. And
speaking of, did you hear about that article? This is more on the football side, but this is kind of interesting. There's a place in Australia that is teaching people to be kickers in the NFL. And there's a few of them in the NFL.
It makes sense. With Australian rules football and the kicking, like, it's a natural transition.
Right. So they just literally have a camp where they just teach you how to kick a football. And then you go and play for the
NFL. Kicker. Yeah, I would love to be an NFL kicker. Those guys, like, have the easiest jobs of all time.
No, they do not, dude. How much pressure is on you if you kick, and if you miss that field goal to win a game, like, you may never... You want to throw
Josh Scobie got fired from being on the Steelers for 3 games because he missed like 2 or 3.
Yeah,
field goals.
You can get
your money is very thin.
You can have a great like 20-year career kicking and not have a lot of the other drama that comes with being an NFL player, potential risk on your health long term. But dude, you got to have ice in your veins if you're an NFL kicker. Like, you miss a clutch kick, you may never come back.
Was the Jags kicker last year?
Myers, I think.
I mean, he was bad.
No, he's
still there.
Rookie.
I think
was and then the and it was
he's
always the wind.
Yeah, well, you know, that's always part of it. I actually went to school with Brandon McManus, who is the kicker for the Broncos.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
last one, and we kind of already hit it a little bit. It's just all the DeMarcus Cousins trade rumors into one. And the comment on Hoops Hype says, I'd say they have 3 months tops, probably more like a month, month and a half, because the closer they get to February, the trade deadline, the less they're going to get back for him, so they'll move him soon.
No, they just got this arena. Like, I just don't think that they do.
I mean, like, he's supposed to be the leader of this team now, and they're still not winning. Like,
I mean, I think that they should, but I also think that the Kings just bought a new arena.
Do you think they only hold on to him because of the arena?
I think that's
like,
a lot
you got
to
this
do
arena, and they're like, well, we need
tickets,
a
and it's just
man.
Like, you don't really sell on talent that good. Like, you have to get a mind-blowing offer to move on from someone that good. And I think the secret of trading superstars is it never really works out. I mean, seriously, when's the last time somebody traded a superstar and they truly got equal value where both sides won?
Okay, well, you don't always want to get equal value, but at the same time, you don't want to be like OKC and then have Kevin Durant leave and you didn't get a damn thing for him. Mm-hmm. You might not get equal value, but you want to get some value in
return.
You
get something at least.
At least a first-round pick.
Well, the thing is, they know Cousins isn't happy with the situation,
Brooklyn pick.
So...
That Brooklyn pick is valuable.
Although the problem with the Brooklyn pick is the Nets actually aren't sucking as bad as we thought.
I mean,
I'll preface it with that.
I mean, they've won like 4 games.
No, they're a team.
I mean, but you know, I mean, when Lin's out, whenever he comes back, they might pick up a few more.
I don't think the Nets are necessarily destined to be the worst team in the league. Like, there's a handful of teams that'll be in the mix to be worst team in the league. Like, Miami's playing pretty bad. Dallas is playing really bad. The Pelicans, pending injuries. I mean, Drew Holiday coming back gives them a boost. The Magic are going to be down there. The Sixers, obviously, are going to be down there. I mean, there's a handful of... I don't think there's a clear worst team in the league right now.
And that's saying something.
That is saying something.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Drive and Dish NBA Podcast. Really appreciate you guys, as always. Check out our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. You can subscribe to our episodes on iTunes if you're an Apple user. If you are an Android or some other type of phone user, check out us on TuneIn, Player FM, Stitcher. We're in the Google Play Store. Also, want to give a shout-out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio, as always, for hosting our show.
And if you have a chance... leave us a review on iTunes and go to our webpage, drivedishpodcast.com.
Preferably a good review. We haven't gotten a nice one in a little bit.
We just read a nice one today.
Yeah, but we got a bad one in between that.
Oh, I can't wait to read the bad one. We do have a bad one coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, we read the good one. We got some good ones, too. We got about 4 more in the stash right now, so keep those reviews coming.
Fair enough. And follow us on all things social media.
It's on the webpage, too, drivedishpodcast.com.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da-da-da-da-da, hey! Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.